Hey guys, welcome to the BBQ Rub Club podcast, where we'll be taking you behind the scenes with barbecue rub companies, sharing their stories and talking everything barbecue. I'm your host, Brian Villanueva, and today we'll be interviewing How about we jump into a little bit of the backstory of the rub? How long you been doing it? Who? Why? How'd you guys get started? That type of stuff.
All right. The short version is we've actually been in business for a year, and that's when we actually did the LLC. We moved into production of our product. We got our business license. So really only about a year with that. Now, the idea behind it,
probably about a 14-year adventure. I actually joined the Coast Guard to cook. And then when I got in the Coast Guard, I figured out, wait a minute, I kind of don't want to cook. I want to work on airplanes. And then stuck it in the back of the pocket, just said, hey, you know what? One day I might start doing this. I never stopped cooking, always did it. So then I got stationed in Mobile, Alabama, and somebody there found out that I can cook pretty good. Let them start cooking for all the events that we had. I made my own seasonings and rubs and just used it in everything that I cooked. People started asking them to buy it. Asking to buy my barbecue sauce. So I was like, man, maybe I do have a good thing. Did a little bit of research, probably about a year and a half, calling co-op bottlers, finding out what the FDA needs, finding out kind of what to do with business, how much money I needed to get started. And my buddy at work, he listened to me talk. We're both at about a retirement age. He's actually getting out this year. I have 4 more years in. And he just came into work one day and he said, hey man, you know what? I believe in everything that you've told me. I think it's a great story. I don't really want to work on airplanes for the rest of my life. If I put in this money, will you put in this money and let's get it done? That's exactly how it all came about.
Sweet man. That sounds, that's awesome. Did you have any formal cooking experience or schooling or anything like that before you joined the Coast Guard, or did you go to school for it, or?
No, I didn't have
just a passion.
Just a passion for it. Grew up in a traditional Catholic family. So you know, every Sunday we had Sunday dinner at my grandmother's house. My mom would cook, my grandmother would cook, and I would sit in the kitchen with them and just watch them. And I think the first thing that I knew how to make growing up was a roux. You know, a little bit of flour, a little bit of water and some bacon grease and making gravy. And from there, I just started cooking a little bit more and more. Cooked throughout my life. In the Coast Guard, I did go to school for a little bit to learn some basic cooking skills. But then again, like I said, then I figured out I really didn't want to do cooking for a career, in the military. So
sure.
I just cooked for friends a lot. Did a lot of barbecue, but also, you know, kept that home southern cooking about me, fried chicken, fried fish, mashed potatoes kind of thing. And only really recently, probably 5 or 6 years ago, is when I really started getting a passion for barbecue, and staying up drinking beer for 16 hours. So that's it.
That's how it gets started, man. That's a great way to get started.
Yeah,
I mean, get started that way, you know.
Exactly. I was like, wait a minute, hang on. I need to find something to fill the time for this 12-hour binge drink ability, you know, and barbecue was the answer.
No doubt, at low and slow, that's what gets it going. So that definitely works. And then, so the name Flaps 20. Go into that a little bit for us. What's that mean, and how did you guys come up with that name?
Flaps 20 is a product of just years and years of working on airplanes, fixed wing aircraft have what they call flaps, and they kind of control the speed of an aircraft when it comes down. The lower the flaps go, the slower the airplane can fly. Gives it a nose up attitude. Basically, for landings and takeoffs, you push your flaps in or out, however you're flying. The original name 2-3 years ago, I wanted to call it Flaps 40. I just thought it was neat. It had a ring to it. Talking to my buddies on the hangar deck, we kept talking. And they were like, man, Flaps 20. We need Flaps 20. Because that's basically how we land our aircraft that we work on all the time. We land them Flaps 20. So we hear that word a lot. So I was like, you know what? That would probably be something that at least aviation, maybe some military would understand if they heard it. We get a couple on our Instagram page. We get a couple aviation guys on there and know exactly what Flaps 20 is. So that's what it is. It's just to kind of pay homage to working 15 years on aircraft and 4 more years or 4.5 more years, I'll be getting out, and it'll have something in the back of my mind saying, man, I used to do that, but now I do this. Kind of tying both of those two things together.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So with the Rub, going from like just doing it from home or, you know, on your own food and things like that to bringing it to a commercial life, was there any major changes in what you had to do or any ingredients or anything like that from what you originally started with to what you have now?
No, there's the ingredients are the exact same that I've used for years now. They're tried and true. That's why they're the ones that we pick to do. The only difference is you'll in the process of getting them actually made, depending on who you go with, you're gonna get tired of your own rub because you're not making it, somebody else is. So if they send you the rub and you're tasting it, you're like, man, this tastes like table salt, not kosher salt, or this has a little bit too much of this ingredient, not enough of this. You have to go back and forth. We were lucky. I would say out of the 8 rubs, I would say probably 4 or 5 came back where we didn't have to do anything. There was no changes. We said, hey, slap a label on it, and we're good. But there was a couple of them that they had to change minor ingredients to get the consistency, the flavoring that we wanted.
Sweet. Your rubs, how many are there? How many?
We have 8. Currently, we have 8. We have from barbecue, we have a barbecue, a Mediterranean steak seasoning. We have a couple, chicken rubs. We have the wing dust, which you picked up and hopefully your barbecue rub club people really enjoy it. We have a Cajun rub, a coffee rub, and we even have a Korean barbecue rub. So it's an extensive line for a brand new company, but we went all out and said, hey, we're going to try these 8. Maybe next year we only have 6, but until we try them, we'd rather try them all at once, see what we have. The worst case scenario that happens is the company that we co-op bottle with has our recipe, and if we need to bring one back after a couple months, it doesn't sell good, but we stop making it for a little while, they at least have it, and we know we've already done the quality assurance on it. So if it picks up during the summer months, or it might be one we sell good on in the winter months, we can just call them and order it and get it. We don't have to go through the process again.
Absolutely. So out of those 8, any particular ones that are your personal favorite that you like?
I would say I'd say my number one favorite would be the Thriller. That's our all-purpose barbecue rub. It's one of our better sellers. It's actually one of the best sellers that we have. I actually use it in competitions. I've taken 5th place in my last barbecue. I brought home 5th place using it on pulled pork. It's good on chicken, ribs. It's pretty good. It's really good on everything. After that, I would have to say that either the Griller, which is our Mediterranean steak and seafood, or our cowboy rub. Our cowboy rub is amazing on a brisket, a big the tomahawk steak, throw some coffee rub, that's what it is, on that, sear it up, grill it up, and it's amazing.
So the Thriller all-purpose rub's favorite, what's your favorite cut of meat? If you're making a meal, what are you cooking?
Ah, this is a good one. This is a really good question. I'm a brisket guy. I really love brisket. Tri-tip, chuck roast, something like that. Something that you can just, you get that big hearty meat flavor out of. I do really well in pork and rib competitions. I do really good on chicken. But I would have to say, man, if it's just me and I'm inviting my buddies over, have a couple beers, watching some football, there's a couple briskets on the smoker.
No doubt. So brisket is one of those slabs of meat cuts that can be really difficult to master, but I think once you have it, it seems like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seems like it's not that bad, you know. I think it's hard to be consistent in a competition world with brisket, but once you master brisket and doing it at home with your friends, you can repeat it on a pretty regular basis that everyone that tries it really likes it, you know. So,
right.
I was going to ask you, what tip would you give to anyone who's just picked up a brisket and is taking it home for the first time? How to cook it? How do you cook yours? How long does it take? What type of, you know, that type of stuff?
And this is a really, this is the one thing that, that I rack my brain. I just can't, I don't know. I can't get it, because I'm part of a ton of forums on Facebook. I look on the web pages and I look at all this stuff, and there are a few great people out there that give great hints. You know, give them their rub recipe. They use salt, pepper, garlic, you know, is a really good one for briskets. But you'll find people trying to tell you exactly how they cook it. Which sometimes it works out great. But me personally, I tell them the different kind of woods that you can use. Mesquite. I use particularly, on all my cooks, I use mesquite and hickory. Sometimes I use a little bit of a pecan if it's for a competition. But brisket, mesquite and hickory, a little bit of my griller rub. I throw it down. Don't necessarily trim it. I think people over trim sometimes, especially if they're getting into it and they don't know, that more fat content is gonna let you mess up on your meat a little bit more, than trimming it down where there's no fat on it. It's probably gonna dry out if you don't know how long you need to cook it. Sure. Another thing I tell people, don't worry about temp, to a certain degree. If you throw your brisket on and your smoker, you know, pegs out and it goes to 300 degrees, I see too many new guys trying to control that 300 degrees, and it ends up, going down to 200, and then they spend the next 4 or 5 hours trying to chase that temp to get it back to 225. I tell people to calm down. 300 degrees for 20 minutes is not going to ruin a brisket. But people,
sure,
new, you know, the new cooks out there, the ones that don't know, they think it will. What's going to ruin it is when it goes down to 200 and then it's stuck at 200 for 4 hours because you can't get it back up. So I tell people just
That's
to take
right.
the time,
yeah.
Watch it. It's always better to add more. If you need a little bit more heat, add a couple more wood. Don't just add all at once and think, okay, yeah, I'm at, you know, just add it gradually. Let the temp go up. I always tell people to start your grill, or start your smoker. Smoke for about an hour, hour and a half with nothing in it. That'll get your peak temps. That you'll see it spike when it first starts burning. Then it'll start coming down. You can adjust your vents to where you need it. And then you feel a little bit more comfortable putting that big piece of meat, because brisket's a very expensive piece of meat to mess up.
Yeah, you don't want to ruin that. 50, last time I bought one was like around 50
yeah,
bucks,
you can't,
depending on where you're getting it. But
yeah, it's expensive. So that's what I would say. I would really tell people to just drink a beer. Relax. Don't go overboard trying to control the temp right off the bat. 30 minutes, even an hour at 275, I don't think it's going to ruin a brisket. I mean, you can always move it to another rack. You can always wrap it in foil and, you know, pull it off the smoker for a little bit, let the temp go down. You know, just take your time. That's all about, it's all about taking your time and enjoying your cook.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great tip because just starting out, a lot of times people get overly concerned with trying to keep the smoker right at 225. And just depending on the type of smoker you have and how well insulated it is or whatever, your temps are going to vary. And it's not as important as you're saying to keep it at 225 throughout the entire cook. So if you're just starting out, yeah, that's a great tip. And you'll get better as you get to learn your smoker, and as you cook over more and more time, you'll get better and better at controlling that temperature and being more consistent with it. That's part of it. But yeah, like you said, going lower is definitely more troublesome than being a little bit higher than what you want to be.
Right.
So what flavor profile would you say your rubs mostly represent? Like, you know, you got Texas, Kansas, Carolinas, or there's the West Coast now.
Our all-purpose.
So.
Our all-purpose is really, it doesn't have. I don't tally it up to any flavor profile. The reason why is it's a mild barbecue rub. It doesn't have a lot of back flavors. It's really simple, but the beauty of it is because it's so simple, I can put that rub on a brisket. I can cook on 100% mesquite, and that brisket's going to taste like a Texas brisket. I can take that rub, slather it on some butts, throw it in, use some oak, some hickory, maybe a little bit of pecan, top it off with some, pull it when it's done, top it off with some South Carolina, vinegar sauce, and it will taste like exactly like what a North Carolina barbecue would taste like. So it allows the flavor profile of our rub, or our Thriller rub, really allows you to cook the meat how you want to cook it, what kind of wood you use, and it kind of absorb that profile. So it is good for just about anything. It's very simple. It's not too complex. I know there's people out there that love those complex rubs, and you know, but I think when you have a complex rub like that, sometimes you pigeonhole yourself into being, hey man, this is a pork butt rub. Ours isn't. Ours
sure.
is an all-purpose rub. Just for that weekender, that guy that wants to go with his family, have a good Labor Day, cook some butts, and enjoy.
Absolutely. Good deal. All right. So you mentioned competing. I think recently you competed. I saw on Instagram you guys won a sauce
yes.
competition.
We're proud of that. We came in second place. Barbecue sauce, using our, in Foley, Alabama, using our Memphis Sweet and Heat sauce. So that was a really proud moment for us.
Sweet. So tell me a little bit about that. I've never competed in a sauce or never seen a sauce competition. How's that work?
It's basically the same thing as the other, you have a time, you have to turn it in. Basically you make your sauce. They give you a little container. You do the same thing with the tray, blind judging, and you just turn it in. Now, once you turn it in, I don't know if they take spoons and taste it. I don't know if they have, some pulled pork that they taste with it. I just know that you turn it in. This is one of the only ones that the Foley Barbecue Blues and Barbecue Festival is one of the only ones that I know that I can compete in that actually has a sauce category. So it's really good. Our sauce is coming out here probably another month. So it's really good for us. It gets us some exposure, get some people trying it, some talking about it. But it is, it's an easy category because it's just sauce, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. That's it, right? It's just sauce. No, Carolina sauce or any different types of,
you can use any,
like
right. You can use any sauce that you want. I know because Alabama is a big white sauce. I know a few people turned in white sauce. I don't know how many other people turned in a sweet barbecue sauce, but it just felt right that day. It was like, you know what? This is good. People were coming up to our table, taking some of our samples and eating it. And they're like, man, this is the best sauce. This is good. So it kind of just all fell together and said, hey, you know what? This is the one that we're going to take to the comp. And we did good with it. So I think the people were right. I'm glad I listened.
Absolutely. Awesome. Congratulations on that. So that was your only entry into that, right? So you only had one entry into the sauce competition.
Yeah,
can you have multiple entries?
No, just one per. Last year we did it. We competed with our South Carolina mustard. Very popular with the guys, my friends. We love it. We love it here at the house. A lot of people won't eat anything but that. But I don't think a lot of people in Alabama were ready for a mustard barbecue sauce. So it didn't do bad. Now it didn't do bad at all. I think we are top seven with it last year. But I didn't want to return to it and do it again this year, just trying to prove a point that it's good. I was like, hey, I'm going to listen to everybody this year and try something different. So, and next year, I think we're going to turn in our Texas barbecue sauce. So maybe we can make first next year.
There you go. Well, good luck with that. And then, so is that sauce that you got, is that coming out soon? You're bottling that? Is that going to be your first time bottling sauces, or how's
yes.
that work?
It works the same as the spice rubs. It's a co-op bottler. What we did, we sent our recipes down. They formulated it. They sent it back to us. They gave us a taste test. They said, hey, is this what you want? Yep, this is good. We like it. Tastes great. Then we worked with South Carolina University or North Carolina State University to get our FDA approved label. So we have our ingredients and the nutrition panel on the side. We worked with a graphic designer to actually design our logos and our labels. We sent those to the label maker. They made the labels. Then basically all we're waiting for is the labels to get delivered, and then they're going to make the run of sauce. We're actually just going to pull the trigger and do all three at one time. So I have a ton of sauce here in about a month.
Sweet, man. I can't wait. Can't wait to try some of them, get some of that sauce. That'd be awesome. You mentioned you guys worked with the university to get the FDA label. Does that cost money, or is that something they do if someone's in, as a school project, or how's that work?
No, there's a couple, and I don't know how many. I mean, there might be more than a couple, but just the company that we worked with to bottle, they work primarily through North Carolina State University. There's other universities. There's other independent labs that you can send your to. Basically, they just take a sample of your barbecue sauce or any food product. They break it down. They put it in some machines, and then they find out, you know, how much fat, how much protein, how much vitamin A, all that, so that you have your nutrition panel. Once it's approved, it's put on what the FDA approves, you know, how it looks, and then that's it. Then you're FDA regulated, and you can go into any grocery store or be sold and hopefully sold, knock on wood. That's what we want. But,
absolutely.
But yeah,
right.
But yeah, it's a very interesting process of from start to finish, everything that you have to kind of do, you know, to be able to be bottled and put into stores or even sold online. There's a lot to do.
Absolutely. Right. So I think that's like probably some of the biggest barriers into entering the market into spices and rubs, right? Plus it's a pretty competitive market as well, because there's, you know, a lot of people with a lot of great rubs out there. And that's part of the reason why we started Barbecue Rub Club is to get those rubs into the hands of more people and help, you know, spread that joy and that passion that the creators of their rubs have with everybody, because there's some great stuff out there. And me personally, I love experimenting. I make my own rubs. I love trying other people's rubs. And if you're on Instagram or social media, you see guys posting pictures with what they're cooking and what they're cooking with, and some of that stuff looks so good, and I'm just, man, I need to try that rub. So that's a lot of the reason why we started Barbecue Rub Club, is because we want to share that with everybody else and share that with, you know, with as many people as we can and help each other, you know, grow.
Yeah, I fully agree. I look at Instagram and I see some great food out there. And some great rubs and some great people. And it's good that Instagram's there. It's good that social media, because you wouldn't hear about, you know, how does a guy in hear about a guy in Mobile, or, you know, a guy in San Diego hear about a rub guy from North Carolina. It's social media does a huge part and plays a huge role in getting our names out there. And there's a ton, and I think all of us can play in the sandbox together, because I think there's enough people out there that like and enjoy different flavor profiles over other stuff, and it's like I said, we all play in the sandbox together and help each other out and support each other and have guys like you helping support and pushing our stuff out there. It's a great opportunity for all of us.
Sure, absolutely, I agree. And like you said, I think there's the piece of the pie is big enough, and that's what we want to do. We want to just share it with everybody and get as many people trying as many different rubs as we can. So that's definitely our goal. Are there any other top barbecue tips you would put out there for a beginner, someone that is either grilling, thinking about going to low and slow barbecue? I like to recognize the guys that are out there grilling as well as the guys that are smoking, because, you know, normal path to smoking low and slow is from grilling, right? You start out grilling, yeah. You're doing hamburgers, hot dogs, that type of stuff, and then you're like, man, I want to try a brisket, you know, or some rubs, or I want to smoke something, and then you go from grilling to smoking, and it's a whole nother ball game. But any tips that you have we could share?
The main thing I would say is one, have your guy or have a go-to person that you can ask questions to. I see two, I really do, and this is me, because barbecue should be all about family and friends. It should be great food, and everybody should be inviting everybody over to their barbecue. And I find that a lot of times I see guys, man, and I know they're brand new guys, and they'll ask a question in a room about, hey, I'm going to do I'm doing a brisket for the first time, or I'm doing a butt, and I got a, you know, I'm looking at this electric smoker, and they'll just get, I mean, it'll just be, and I know people are having fun and they're poking fun, but those new guys, man, it doesn't matter. I have a char griller Acorn. I don't have a Green Egg. I have a char griller Acorn. I have a gas smoker. I have a rig that, you know, as a over under that I use for competitions, but I mean, and I have a pit cooker. I have a pit smoker pit cooker. So I have all kinds of stuff, but for those people that just want to get started, an electric, a gas, you know, those kind of smokers are easy. You don't have to worry about temp control too much because you kind of set it and forget it and worry about, hey, you know what? Let me try this rub. Let me try this wood. Let me try this piece of meat. And then just get into, you know, fine tuning your meat. And once you get that done, I've told there's probably four or five guys that I work with. I had them go buy a gas smoker. They've used them for about a year and a half, and now they're all going out and looking to buy, you know, side firebox Oklahoma Joes, or, you know, they're looking to buy a more expensive one. But I find it so many times that people buy that Oklahoma Joe right off the bat. They have the side firebox. They think they got it. And then 6 months down the road, they're still making crappy barbecue because they never had time to learn. Because they think that's absolutely what everybody, you know, they think, oh man, I have to use this. I have to use. No, man, use an electric, right. Yeah. Use a gas smoker for a, I used one and I still do use it. Like I said, I have my stick burner. And I have some other stuff that I can use, but it, one, it's easy. I can make sure the flavor profile is there. I don't use it for competitions because you can't. But I'm no less of a barbecuer, smoker because I use a gas. A lot of the new guys, sure. I think a lot of the new guys just need to simplify stuff sometimes. Don't go and jump in. And then there's other, I mean, there's a ton of stuff that, you know, about it. It's 50% of the people, you know, use water pans, 50% don't. You know, just, hey, right. If you like to use a pan to put water in, I'm not going to say anything about it. Use it.
You know, if it works for you, right?
Make your own decisions.
Yeah. If I could piggyback onto that, man, I love that because, my own personal story and going to my first competition, I was cooking on a Charbroil $150 smoker that you pick up at Home Depot, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but there was 150 teams there, and I was pulled up next to a guy with that in the back of my truck, and he's got like a $12,000 rig sitting next to me, you know, and I could kind of tell there was some guys smirking at me in this, but after I pulled second place in ribs off that smoker, you know, nobody was laughing after that. And, like you said, man, it doesn't matter. You just get started. Just get started. You don't have to cook on the most expensive equipment or go out and buy the most expensive thing. As long as you're learning and you're getting better, that's all that matters. I told someone the other day, I was like, it's the kind of the equivalent of going out and buying the best golf club set that you could spend your money on and then thinking you're going to play like Tiger Woods or something. I mean, it's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good your clubs are. It's not going to improve your game if you don't have the fundamentals, you know? So, same thing with barbecue, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize either, that competition barbecue is good, but it's not what you're going to serve your family all the time. You know, like I said, it is absolutely wonderful. I love to eat my competition barbecue. But I just, you know, I can serve just regular spare ribs and not worry about plating and not worry about any of that. And it just be just as good.
And everybody's going to love it, right? I mean,
yeah. Don't get discouraged, man. The only people that I find, you know, when I pulled fifth place and pulled pork, I didn't feel discouraged, man. I felt, hey, you know what? That's good. But I got people at my house. I got friends that tell me it's awesome. So as long as people are enjoying it and people are eating it, man. Now I have had one time I did overcook some chicken and it was mushy. I didn't do too well in it. And that was one day that I kind of held my head, but I know exactly what I did. You know, I was like, man, that was probably a little too much Miller Lite, and not enough watching the temp. But that only happened once, you know?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I could tell you when we're going to eat a lot of competition barbecue at home, and that's normally after I went to a competition and got my ass handed to me and figured I needed to go back to the drawing board and figure some stuff out, and so I'll try to practice and perfect my recipe, right, or get some stuff down, or maybe, you know, and so until everyone gets absolutely tired of eating some competition barbecue. But yeah, like you said, I mean, that's not, you don't have to serve that to serve good food. And still, you know, sometimes I'll just throw some stuff on and be experimenting and have people tell me, hey, this is the best barbecue I've ever had. And I'm just, I'm always blown away by those type of comments, but, it never gets old hearing it. But then I also think to myself, well, maybe you just haven't eaten a lot of other people's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe that's the first time they've eaten it. And you're like, well, hey, hang on. What? Wait. Yeah, I hear you. And I totally agree. And another thing, I think growing up, I know my mom, if I trimmed chicken thighs, like you trim competition chicken thighs and you're just throwing that meat away, I would have got slapped for wasting food. You know, so my chicken thighs look like chicken thighs, you know, 90% of the time, except that one day
right.
I got to trim them and make them look like little hockey puck things.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a great tip, and appreciate you sharing that, man. Cause I agree 100%, you know, just get out there, get started. That's what's more important. Don't worry about going spending $10,000 on a smoker, because it's not going to make your food taste any better than what you can get off of stuff you can buy at Home Depot, you know?
Yep. That is absolutely, absolutely true.
What's the, on the flip side of that, what is the craziest barbecue tip you've probably ever heard, or someone's come up to you and said, hey, I do this, or hey, you should try this and get good results.
This is my one pet peeve, and you may, when you do this podcast and you put it out there, there's probably going to be 50 people at least that are going to comment on this. But my only real pet peeve, is the dry brine. I hear people talk about it all the time, that they dry brine something. Oh man, we dry brine it. And it just, the word brine literally means like salt water. So I don't know how you can dry brine something, because brine is a liquid. And to me, if you dry brine something, you're seasoning it. And I see too many people out there, and this is one of those things that the new people kind of latch on, I think, and they're like, oh, no, dry brining is the best. I've dry brined stuff for 20 years, and I call it seasoning. You know, I brine chicken because I put it in salt water, and I brine it. Two totally different things, but that's my one tip that I would tell, you know, everybody, new guys. Brining is not bad. Putting your chicken in water, or in salt water, kind of draws the blood out. I do it for my competition chicken. I think it works out well. But if you don't want to brine it, put salt on it. It's called seasoning, but you can put salt on it and do the same kind of thing. But that's the one tip and it's not a crazy
tip.
It's out there. People do it. People call it what they want to. It's just, you know, it's just brine means a water solution. So dry.
Sure.
And brine.
Well, that's a new one for me. I haven't heard of that one yet, but I'll definitely be on the lookout for it. That's a good one. While you were saying that, it made me think of another, question. And it kind of goes back a little bit, but that's all right. What got you into competing? When was your first competition? How'd you do? What got you into competing? When did you like, oh, man, I'm going to go compete? Like, how'd that happen?
Again, I cook for my unit. So I cook anywhere from for 150 to 1,000 people at a time when we have our little like morale days or our get-togethers. And just those guys telling me, man, this is really great. This is really great. This is good food. On Facebook one day I was surfing around and here's this, you know, Foley Blues and Barbecue Festival. You know, backyard, ABA, which is the Alabama Barbecue Association, anybody can enter. It was like $100. So I was like, hey, you know what? I got a bunch of buddies, man, that we enjoy cooking, we enjoy drinking beer. Why not camp out on St. Patrick's Day to do this cook? I got six guys together and we said, yep, we're gonna do it. We went, Foley's about an hour and a half away. We pulled a Halstein whole pig cooker. It's a pit style, you know, you cook whole hog on it. We pulled it behind the truck and we took it, and that's what we competed on. And we had no idea what we were getting into, none at all. I think we had 10 Boston butts. We had like 30 pounds of chicken, chicken leg quarters at that. We had some spare, we had like four racks of spare ribs, and we're just like, we're going to cook. I mean, it looked like we were cooking for an army, not a competition. But we had we had a blast. We talked to everybody, and it was just kind of a spur of the moment thing that we wanted to all kind of hang out. The trophies got and everybody was walking up getting trophies, and you know, we're like, dude, we're probably not going to win anything. This is our first time. And they actually called us for second place people's choice, which to me, being brand new, I was like, man, listen, six judges judged everything else, but 1,000 or 1,500 people judged my pulled pork, and I got second place in that. That kind of just got me hooked. And then I joined the KCBS, so I could look and find out where all the local events were, and just, you know, kept doing them, and since I've actually improved in all my stuff. I got fifth in pulled pork. I've got second in the sauce. This weekend I have another one, and I'm really hoping for a top three. In a few.
Fun.
Yeah, and it's going to be a really good time.
So the ABA, what's their scoring system like? Is it similar to the KCBS or?
Yeah, it's exactly like the KCBS, exactly the same format. They kind of piggyback on all the rules. So any rule changes the KCBS has, it takes about a year. But then the ABA, you know, kind of just marries into what they have already. So they're about a year behind.
Sure.
With some of the stuff. But the guys, the organizers, the people who put them on are really, really good at letting you know what's going on. I mean, because it could be, you could do two competitions this year where they won't let you use Kel, and then the rest of the year you can, because they keep up to date with some of that stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. So then, did you receive feedback on your turn-in boxes when you turned them in and get your scores back from
we got
that first competition?
Yeah, we got our scores back, and we got some of the feedback from some of the judges that walked around, and it was all because we were brand new. I mean, we were quantity over quantity. You know, we were quantity over quality type. We turned in great product, but we turned in whole spare ribs. You know, the box was loaded. Like, you're going to take it home to your family and eat. The guy, and the funniest story of the whole thing is, this one guy, he was late. He wasn't going to stay the night. So he called us the morning of, and he said, hey man, I'm sorry I'm running late. Is there anything that we need to bring? We said, yeah. We need some green stuff. We need some greens for our turn-in boxes. Got some lettuce, some something, you know. And he's like, yeah, man, I got it. I know exactly what to get. So when he got there, it's about turn-in time. He throws three bags of shredded lettuce, iceberg lettuce on the table. And he's like, here, man, use this.
Man.
So, yeah, we knew our boxes were not, I mean, they weren't good at all. I mean, it looked like a taco salad of ribs is what our boxes look like.
Which is the thing. I can just picture that in my mind, but that sounds sounds hilarious. But
it was hilarious.
The other thing is, I mean, it really shouldn't matter how that appeared. What should matter more was how it tasted. But
right.
Maybe it probably didn't taste as good as it does now either. Because no, I'm sure, you've learned a lot and got better.
And a matter of fact, because it was St. Patrick's Day, there was actually a pub across the street. We almost didn't get like our ribs on in time. I thought probably the boxes looked decent, but when they opened them up, I mean, the lettuce could have been on top of the meat for all I know. I mean, it was one of those type nights.
Oh man, that sounds like a blast, man. And that's awesome. So when I first started competing out in Texas, that you didn't get, there's no score sheet. So you either got a call, and the way they do it is a little bit different. You get a raffle ticket. So that when they come around and give you your boxes, the other side of that, the other half of that raffle ticket is taped to your box. And then you have the half, that they call, you know, well, they call the number. And if it's your number, then obviously you won, right? So, outside of that, you get zero feedback on how you did. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was a learning experience for me to come out to California, compete in the KCBS competition, and know that you get scores and feedback, and you get your score, your judge's card that tells you how crappy your food is.
Yeah. Yep.
You
exactly.
Know.
Yeah, I know.
So, and that happened to me. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure everybody who's ever competed probably knows a little bit what that tastes like or feels like when you get that scorecard back.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Travis, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for your time, and thanks so much for being on our first show. How do people find you if they're looking for Flaps 20?
We have an Instagram, Flaps 20, Sauces and Rubs. Our Facebook page is the same thing, Flaps 20, Sauces and Rubs. We also have a Flaps 20 Backyard Barbecue group where you can ask questions, put your pictures up. You know, ask for comments, stuff like that. And then we have our website, which is flaps20barbecue.com. We try to update it with all our new pictures. We have tips, tricks. We have a bunch of recipes on that page. And that's also how you can buy some of our product. We have a link to you, the Barbecue Rub Club. So if they want and they look through our page and they're like, man, you know what? I don't know what I want. They can click on your site. It takes you directly to the Barbecue Rub Club. They can order your stuff and my stuff at the same time. We just like to support everybody that we can. We appreciate everybody else that's given us a chance. And we want to pass it on to other people too. So look us up, hit us up, ask us some questions, give us a call, give us a comment. We like all of it. And that's what we're here for.
Awesome, man. Appreciate that. And, we spoke a little bit earlier, and you mentioned that there's possibly YouTube channel coming. Added to that mix.
Yeah. Or? We're gonna upgrade some of our, technology, I guess you want to say. We're going to start a YouTube page. And basically it's going to be geared towards great food. But it's going to be family, it's going to be friends, it's just going to be a bunch of me and my buddies, you know, sitting down. We're going to actually film the first one here this weekend, up in Monroeville, Alabama for a competition. going to be a little bit of behind the scenes of the competition, a little bit of our cook, just so people can start knowing who we are. And then probably going to branch off, have it where if you comment and say, hey, we want to see how you do a brisket. We want to see how you cook this. And then just do like personalized cooks and help people out. I think it'll be good, you know. If not, it'll be probably something awesome. Pretty funny to watch because I am I'm not good at any of that. Cooking I'm good at, but
absolutely.
Not the video.
Yeah.
The video editing may not be the best.
That's awesome, man. That sounds like fun. Looking forward to seeing some of that come out. So can't wait. Again, Travis, thanks so much for being on, man.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. And, hey, don't forget to kick the tires and light fire. Barbecue time.